Hey, Sonny. Welcome back. We missed you last week, but it's going to be just you and me this week.
Yes, I'm glad to be back. COVID-free, healthy, all those good things.
Yes, also always very good. And Hogan is not going to be with us. And before we get started, I want to remind everybody to please like and subscribe and give a thumbs up on Rumble and Apple Podcasts and everywhere else you can to keep this podcast going. We would really very much appreciate that. And let's get into this here before we get started, Sonny. Has anyone do people ever talk to you or mention to you that they listened or watched the podcast? Does that ever come up?
Yes, they do. And I've even had some mentions on Twitter about it, which has been great. But yes, I've had some friends mention that they're watching it and they enjoy it. And of course, my family, because they're very supportive. What
Sure.
would life be without your family?
That's true. That's true. Sometimes quiet. It would be
Yes.
quiet without your
That's
family.
true. How about you, Tim?
It would be quiet without my family. Is that what you mean?
No, I meant, do your friends watch the podcast?
Oh, I see. It's funny. I got a text from a buddy of mine from college, which is going back a ways. And, we have stayed in touch moderately. And I didn't know he was listening to the podcast. And I got a text from him the other day that said that it made him feel old to learn that you, Sonny Joy Nelson, had never seen the movie Groundhog Day.
I apologize to your friend. That was never my intention.
Yeah, that's okay. I'm sure he'll get over it. But he did say, boy, that makes me feel old. And then, and you know, when you said a couple of weeks ago during something we were talking about that you had never seen the movie, thought maybe it would be a good idea to see if you could watch it, and then we'll go through it with some clips here to talk about the movie because it is a kind of a fan favorite and people love it. I think it's one of the best movies ever made, and we can get your thoughts on that. How's that grab you?
That sounds great. And I have to add in, right before we started recording, I was just talking to my dad, who's watching my little boy right now. And I told him this is what we were talking about. And he was like, "What? You've never seen Groundhog Day?" I was like, "It's such a good movie." And he started quoting it. And yeah, he's a big movie guy. He
Yeah,
didn't
well,
pass that
great.
on to me.
That's good. I have met your dad a couple of times, and he seems, I think we would get along.
Oh, yeah,
I mean, we
definitely.
have on the times where we've met, but I think we could be buddies if I lived in North
Plus your love
Carolina.
of baseball. So y'all
Yeah,
got so much in common. Be
there's a lot.
BFFs.
There's a lot. So anyway, let's get right to that because we're giving the people what they want today because this is the Line Drive Podcast. Let's not waste any time because I got a lot of clips from this movie, and I hope this it doesn't get pulled because of copyright infringement or whatever else. But anyway, what we're talking about today is the classic movie Groundhog Day, which of course is a Bill Murray movie from 1993. Do I have that right?
Oh, Tim, I wasn't even born then.
Yeah, I know it's before your time for sure. And nice prep work I'm doing here. I don't even know the year that the movie was made. 1993, starring Bill Murray, Andy McDowell, and Chris Elliott gets star billing here. Chris Elliott plays the cameraman. And well, let's just get right into it. The plot is, it's entered the American lexicon, Groundhog Day, meaning that it's something tedious that keeps repeating itself over and over and over again, which was not the original meaning of Groundhog Day because of the little, that was the little holiday where the groundhog predicts the weather. But here, this is the synopsis of the movie. And did you know this going in? Did you know anything about it or just what we had told you?
Well, I knew the saying Groundhog Day meant, it sounded like it felt like the same thing happening over and over and over again. But I did not know that it came from a movie. I thought that I don't know where I thought that came from. So yeah, I honestly I'd never heard of the movie, which I guess I'm a
Really?
little embarrassed to say. Yeah, I don't know,
Not.
Tim. I've never been a movie person. I mean, like, I've watched all the like Avengers and all that with my brother and my family, but like the classics, I mean, we talked about this with the Christmas movie episode. I don't know what it is about me. I just fall asleep in movies. Movies don't generally pique my interest. I'm more of a TV show type of girl.
Yeah.
But I'm working on it. I'm doing it. I'm trying
So,
my hardest.
not only had you not seen the movie, you were not even aware of its existence. Is that
Not to
accurate?
my knowledge, yeah. I mean, I'm
Wow.
sure I'd heard of it at some point, but it was not one of the ones that I knew of. Like Sandlot. I'd
Yeah.
never Really, I've like seen bits and pieces of Sandlot, but I don't know if I've seen the whole thing from beginning to end. Even being a baseball family.
Yeah, we could do a show on that one. Sandlot is a good one. It's a classic. I don't think it rises to the level of Groundhog Day. I think Groundhog Day is one of the greatest movies ever made, comedy or otherwise. I really do.
You want to know? Sorry, go ahead.
Jonah Goldberg, who writes for, has written for National Review, and he writes, he's, you know, he's one of the guys, he's an anti-Trump guy now. It's basically what he's known for. But he wrote a column a number of years ago talking about Groundhog Day and how wonderful it is and all the messages that it imparts and all that stuff. And he used to repost that column every year on Groundhog Day. And it, that's actually honestly what drew my attention to the idea that this really could be one of the timeless classics and not just a great Bill Murray movie, you know. And that got me thinking about. So here's, this is for those listeners who don't know, and even the ones who do, I think they'll enjoy this.
We're going to go like me.
Yeah, I mean, by now I think a lot of people had seen it. I don't know about most, but anyway. What we're going to do is go through the plot, and at appropriate points, I'll play some clips, and you can react and tell us what your thoughts were at the time when you were watching it for the very first time, which you have now done. Right, yes. within just the last few days.
Yeah, just two nights ago. And also, I have a favorite part. If you want me to wait and hold my favorite part to the end, I will tell you.
Yeah, why don't you? Because I couldn't say if I have that part in the clips. Okay. Why don't you tell me? Right. Well, let's wait till we get to it. And when we talk about it, you can say this is my favorite part. Okay.
Okay.
So on February 1st, we don't know exactly what year this is, but on February 1st, I'm reading from the Wikipedia plot summary here. This made it easier on myself. Television weatherman Phil Connors, that's Bill Murray, reassures his Pittsburgh viewers that an approaching blizzard will miss Western Pennsylvania. Alongside his new producer, Rita Hansen, that's Andy McDowell, and cameraman Larry, that's Chris Elliott, Phil travels to Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania for his annual coverage of the Groundhog Day festivities. He makes no secret of his contempt for the assignment, the small town, and the hicks who live there, asserting that he will soon be leaving his station for a new job. Now, on the morning of Groundhog Day, February 2nd, Phil wakes up in what's called the Cherry Street Inn to Sonny and Cher's I Got You Babe playing on the alarm clock radio. And here's that clip.
Then put your little hand in mine. There ain't no hill or mountain we can't climb.
Morning.
Morning.
You off to see the groundhog?
Yes, I am.
You think it's going to be an early spring?
I'm predicting March 21st.
Oh, good guess. You know, I think that actually is the first day of spring.
I don't suppose there's any possibility of getting an espresso or a cappuccino this morning, is there?
Oh, I really don't know.
How to spell espresso and cappuccino. This looks fine.
I hope you enjoyed the festivities.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure I'm going to.
Will you be checking out today, Mr. Connors?
Chance of departure today, 100%.
Okay. In that last part of that scene, this is a montage. Some of these clips have actually been edited within the clip for the sake of time, by the way. So the last guy, he's passing the homeless guy on the street and he goes through the motions of pretending to pat his pockets like there's money in there and he's going to give it to the guy, but he walks right past him. And that homeless guy plays a part throughout the course of the movie. So there he is at the very beginning. And I think this was probably at roughly the time when you sent me a text while you were watching it saying, well, right off the bat, he's a jerk.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What are you thinking going in? This is sort of the opening establishing of what the movie is going to be. What do you think?
Yeah. Well, his interaction with every single person right there in the opening clip, I was just like, oh my gosh, what a jerk! This guy is seriously like the worst. He's like what I think of when I think of like New York, like guys. Like this guy is on TV, he thinks he is just the best thing ever, he's too good for every single person he comes in contact with, and he was just so mean to the little old lady that was just trying to be nice to him and give him some coffee and breakfast. I'm like, what the heck? And that is, you're right, right during all of this is when I texted you and I was like, what the heck, this guy is so rude.
Yeah, it's funny that he's a TV weatherman, because it reminds me of the way sort of like the New York Times and others, when they, the way they treat what they call flyover country.
Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah. He looks down on everybody. He is more metropolitan than everybody else, and he's cooler, and everybody that he encounters is a complete waste of his time.
Yeah. Know? Yep. That's exactly what I thought.
So he goes and he gives a half-hearted report on, again, this is Wikipedia, the plot summary, on the groundhog, Punxsutawney Phil, who, of course, is world famous. And contrary to his prediction, the blizzard strikes the area, preventing all travel out of Punxsutawney. And although he desperately searches for a way to leave, Phil is forced to spend the night in the town. That's Phil Connors spending the night in the town, not Punxsutawney Phil, who we...
I was about to say, yeah. Isn't the groundhog's name Phil?
Yeah, I don't think that's by accident, Sonny.
Look at that.
How about that? So the next morning, he wakes up and thinks that everything is normal. And wakes up once more to the song, I Got You, Babe. And by the way, let me ask you this. Did you know that song before this movie?
I mean, I've heard it, but no, I didn't know it. And wait, can I comment about the way he wakes up every morning?
Sure.
He looks so not peaceful, and he just looks like a corpse laying there. Like, who sleeps that straight?
I know, with the blankets right up to his chin.
Yeah, like, perfectly not crinkled or anything. Like, I mean, I don't sleep like that.
No, I don't think so. I don't either. So he wakes up the next morning. I Got You, Babe is playing. It's the same DJ banter on the radio in his room at the Cherry Street Inn. And Phil experiences the previous day's events repeating exactly. And he believes that he is experiencing deja vu. Here's that clip.
Then put your little hand in mine. There ain't no hill or mountain we can't climb, babe. I got you, babe. I got you, babe. Okay, campers, rise and shine, and don't forget your booties, cause it's cold out there.
It's cold out there every day. What is this, Miami Beach?
Hardly. How's it going, boys? You're playing yesterday's tape.
Morning! See the groundhog?
Yeah.
Think it'll be an early spring.
Didn't we do this yesterday?
I don't know what you mean.
Don't mess with me, pork chop. What day is this?
It's February 2nd. Groundhog Day.
Do you ever have deja vu, Mrs. Lancaster?
I don't think so, but I could check with the kitchen.
No, that's okay. Thank you.
Will you be checking out today, Mr. Connors?
I'd say the chance of departure is 80%. 75-80.
Okay. So I want to say something. The guy that he meets on the stairs there, I can picture that guy talking. I don't know if he's a well-known character actor or what, but can you picture him talking to his family saying, guess what? I got a role in a really big Bill Murray movie. My character's name is Porkchop. Bill Murray's going to call me Porkchop in the movie. So there it is. So now he's beginning to go. This is the first time he's experiencing the same day. And do you, as you're watching this, do you get any hints of what's about to come?
Yes. Yeah. After that first, well, I mean, also not really fair, because I kind of knew it was coming since we talked about it. But his reaction to the Porkchop man was so uncalled for. But to me, he's just so egocentric and just so full of himself that I guess I shouldn't expect any less to be coming from him. But at least he wasn't super mean to the little lady serving him breakfast that day, other than the deja vu comment.
Yeah. Well, by the time he got downstairs, he had calmed down a little bit. But he, you don't think it was appropriate to, when you meet strangers on the stairway, to rack them up against the wall?
No. That's not my go-to reaction. But what was I going to say? I was going to say something. Oh, could you imagine that actually happening? Waking up and being like, did this not just happen? I get deja vu frequently, but I mean, obviously this is a whole new level.
Have you experienced it? I think from time to time, I catch just sort of a whiff that I've been somewhere in a situation before or something. I can't see the future, but I feel familiarity with something. That's the way it usually hits me.
No, I get deja vu a lot. It was just funny you said I can't see the future.
yeah. Well, I can't. I don't want to claim that. I can't.
I was going to say, Tim, if you could see the future, we need to be having some different kind of conversations.
That's true.
No, I get deja vu a lot. Like, I feel like I've lived this before, like certain situations. It just happened to me the other day when I was sitting in my house when I think my brother was there and we were playing with the baby. And I was like, man, I'm having a weird deja vu right now.
Yeah, that's the way it hits me. Like, I can't really put my finger on it, but it's like,
yeah,
I've lived through this moment in time.
Maybe we're crazy, Tim.
No, I mean, there's a word for it, right? Deja vu. Two words. I don't think it's just us. Although I do want to, I underline the fact that I can't see the future. so this continues to happen, and Phil gradually realizes that he's trapped in a time loop of which no one else is aware. See, that's the weirdest, and it must have been really hard because there are some gaps in here. Like, there's no way if for everybody else they're only experiencing one day, and he's experiencing the same day over and over again. I think there is kind of a leap where you're expected to believe some things about how people learned all this stuff as you go on through the movie. People learned all this stuff about Phil Connors all in one day for them. Yeah, that's a little hard to believe because they begin to have as much knowledge about him as he has about them, but they've only had one day and he's had.
Right. I don't want to jump to the end, but I had that same thought towards the end of the movie when they're at that party. And everyone's like, oh, Phil, my favorite person. And I'm like, wait, they only met him today, though. Right. So that was a little bit of an
error. A little bit much. So he confides his situation. It must be hard to make a movie about this without having that problem, I would think. He tells Reed all about this, and she tells him to go see a neurologist who sends him to a psychologist, and nobody can explain what's happening to him. And so he starts to behave badly as he believes, oh, man, I'm trapped in this thing. So he goes out, and he gets drunk with a couple of locals, a couple of guys named Gus and Ralph. He then leads police on a high-speed car chase before being arrested and thrown in jail. And the next morning, guess what? He wakes up all over again at his little bed and breakfast. Now, he realizes that there aren't any consequences for his actions, and that's when he really starts to behave badly. And this is him at the beginning of hanging out with Gus and Ralph. Here's that clip.
What's your name?
I'm sorry. This is not Gus and Ralph. This is an example of how Phil is a bad guy, and he uses the fact that he's reliving the same day over and over again to pick up women. So here's Phil behaving badly with some girl that he sees in the diner.
What's your name?
Nancy Taylor, and you are?
What high school did you go to?
What?
High school.
Lincoln in Pittsburgh. Who are you?
Who was your 12th grade English teacher?
Are you kidding?
No. In 12th grade, your English teacher was...
Mrs. Walsh.
Mrs. Walsh, yeah. Nancy. Lincoln. Walsh. Nancy Taylor! Lincoln High School! I sat next to you in Mrs. Walsh's English class.
Oh, Phil.
Oh, Rita.
Who's Rita?
How should I know?
How should I know? So he's using, a lot of guys would not want to admit this, but if they were trapped in a time loop, they might use it for those exact circumstances, for those exact purposes.
I'm going to go with most guys would do that.
You think that's true?
Yes, I do, unfortunately. But there are the good ones out there that wouldn't. But he does this a couple of times. We'll probably get into it. But he does it a couple of times throughout the movie. He uses his unending days to learn about the producer. What's her name?
Rita.
Yeah. To learn all about her.
So as we're in this, at this point of the movie, what they're doing is exposing Phil's character. And in your mind, what have we learned about Phil by this point?
My opinion of him has not changed at this point. I know that he's still a kind of scumbag, not really a scumbag when it comes to women. And not that he's a bad person through and through. But
I think he's a bad person.
Really? Yeah, I mean, yeah, not like he's out there committing crimes, but he's not nice. He's very full of himself. And yeah, right now, I don't think he has learned anything. His personality hasn't changed. And I'm still not rooting for him at this point in the movie.
No, you certainly are not. And he does commit crimes. You know, at one point he
drunk driving.
Drunk driving, sure. But he also robs an armored truck. There's a scene where he times the movements of the guys coming out of the bank and with the armored truck and all that stuff. And when they're bending down, picking up a bunch of quarters that somebody has dropped, he walks past and just grabs a bag of money and keeps on going. So he does.
It's true. I forgot about that.
It's been crimes. But eventually, speaking of Rita, he does focus on Rita and uses his repeating of the days to try to manipulate her and trick her into getting her in bed or falling in love with him. And none of this really goes well, at least at the beginning. And here's a clip of that.
Can I buy you a drink?
Okay.
Jim Beam, ice, water.
For you, miss?
Sweet vermouth in the rocks with a twist, please.
Can I buy you a drink?
Okay.
Sweet vermouth, rocks with a twist, please.
For you, miss?
The same. That's my favorite drink.
Mine, too. It always makes me think of Rome. The way the sun hits the buildings in the afternoon.
Well, what should we drink to?
To the groundhog.
I always drink to world peace. Well, what should we drink to?
I like to say a prayer and drink to world peace.
To world peace. This whole day has just been one long setup.
No, it hasn't.
And I hate fudge. Yuck.
No white chocolate, no fudge.
What are you doing? Are you making some kind of list or something?
No.
Did you call up my friends and ask them what I like and what I don't like?
No.
Is this what love is for you?
No, this is real. This is love.
Stop saying that. You must be crazy. I could never love someone like you, Phil, because you'll never love anyone but yourself.
That's not true. I don't even like myself.
And so that's one of the rare times where he actually tells the truth, because I don't think he likes himself very much. So there you go. He's trying. He uses all the tricks and he's getting to repeat the opening few seconds of him sitting down at the bar with Rita, repeating that time over and over and over again until he gets the conversation just exactly right. But it's a dirty trick because he's learning all the right things to say and all that. And she apparently is able to see through him. What do you think about all that?
I also think that, yes, he was probably using it for the wrong reasons to try to get her in bed or whatever. But he also was deep down probably trying to learn about her because he actually cares about her, even if he doesn't express it yet. Deep down, he really cares about her, which we see throughout the movie. And I think it's kind of sweet that he tried to learn all the things about her, all her likes and dislikes. And a lot of guys don't try to do that anymore. But good for her for standing up for it and seeing through it.
Even if it's for nefarious purposes. It is interesting that he focuses on who is clearly the nicest character with the best personal character. You know, yeah. Rita is clearly the nicest person in the entire movie.
Right.
In a town full of nice people. I mean, they seem to be very nice, but Rita is like the good person, you know. Interesting. So how does he redeem himself now? Because I think at any time if he continues to pursue Rita, it's going to look completely self-serving, and he knows all the stuff that he's learned about her. Just because she gets mad at him doesn't mean that he forgot all the stuff. Is he redeemable? Is Phil Connery redeemable?
Well, yes, because she's going to forget about it. She's not going to know that happened.
Okay, no, for her, yes, he's redeemable. Yeah. But in your mind, as a viewer, what do you think?
Yes. Well, I tend to be an optimist, and I want people to, no matter how bad they are throughout the movie, I'd like for them to redeem themselves at the end. So in my mind, yes, I'm hoping that it has a happy ending, that he comes to terms with himself, and that he will turn a page in his book and become a better person and see that he's going through all this because he has been a bad person.
Yeah. I think that that line where he says, I don't even like myself.
Yeah, I think that was a turning point.
That's a key turning point in the whole movie. Mm-hmm. Definitely. So he gradually becomes depressed. And as he keeps reliving things over and over again, and he's looking for a way to escape this loop, and he commits suicide in a variety of different ways. I'm not going to show
many times.
Yeah. So we see him driving the truck with the groundhog in his front lap off a cliff in a quarry or something, and it explodes in a ball of fire, and he jumps out of a building, out of a clock tower, and he sits in a bathtub and drops a toaster plugged in into the bathtub. And every day he's dead. And they even have to go identify him in the morgue one time. But every day he wakes up again and it's Groundhog Day and it didn't work. So he gradually becomes more depressed. And every day he wakes up to that same song. And then he eventually tries to actually explain what's happening to Rita using his detailed knowledge of everything to try to prove it to her. And this is back in that same diner again. Here's that clip.
This is Doris. Her brother-in-law, Carl, owns this diner. She's worked here since she was 17. More than anything else in her life, she wants to see Paris before she dies.
Oh, boy, what a...
What are you doing?
This is Debbie Kleiser and her fiancé, Fred.
Do I know you?
They're supposed to be getting married this afternoon, but Debbie is having second thoughts.
What?
Lovely ring.
This is Bill. He's been a waiter for 3 years since he left Penn State and had to get work. He likes the town, he paints toy soldiers, and he's gay.
I am.
This is Gus. He hates his life here. He wishes he stayed in the Navy.
Well, I could have retired on half pay after 20 years.
Excuse me? Is this some kind of trick?
Well, maybe the real God uses tricks. You know, maybe he's not omnipotent. He's just been around so long. He knows everything.
Oh, okay. Well, who's that?
This is Tom. He worked in the coal mine until they closed the town.
And her?
It's Alice. Came over here from Ireland when she was a baby. She lived in Erie most of her life.
He's right. And her?
Nancy. She works in the dress shop and makes noises like a chipmunk when she gets real excited.
Hey!
True.
How do you know these people?
I told you, I know everything. In about 5 seconds, a waiter's gonna drop a tray of dishes. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Okay?
Okay, that's enough.
So he goes into that scene telling her that he thinks that he's discovered that he's a god. But obviously he's not, he's just reliving it. But do you think you are a devout person, Sonny? Do you feel is there a message here that in some way that there is God's hand at work here because he is gradually improving himself?
Oh, that's a good deep
not that he is God, but
right.
Yeah. Something has occurred to be making him relive this over and over again, right? So
yeah. Or would it be God that's making him relive this over and over again? It would have to be.
That's what I mean. Yeah.
Yes, but I mean, the movie doesn't really go into any kind of like spiritual connection or explanation as to what was causing him to live this over and over again. But yeah, for him to say he's a god, I'd say it's a little blasphemous. But can I also say, side note, every time in the movie when they played the part of that waiter dropping those dishes and it making a loud sound, my baby was asleep on the couch with me. And every time it did it, he like jerked awake because of it. And so I had it down. I had the volume down on like one in the subtitles on the things you do as a mother to keep your baby asleep.
I know. So little Isaiah will have maybe not memories, but an imprint of this movie on his little brain.
He will have seen it much earlier in his life than I did.
You know, and it's funny. So here's Phil, and this is at the point where he's starting to turn the corner and start to use these opportunities, reliving the same day to improve himself. And you can see that he's learning everything about all the people who are in the diner every day, where he spends a lot of time, obviously. But even when he's doing that, he's still kind of a jerk. Because in his efforts to prove to Rita that he knows stuff about these people, he might be causing them problems by saying it. Like he's saying, oh, yeah, these people are about to get married, but she's having second thoughts. Wait, what?
Yeah. Yeah. Their deep, dark secrets.
Not the best.
Yeah. But I was just going to say, she ends up believing him, right? On that day that it was happening. And obviously then the next day she doesn't know again, but imagine how relieved he probably felt having someone believe him. after going through, because it doesn't really explain exactly how many days he had been reliving, does it?
It doesn't. But we can get, there's a website that estimated it. We can once we get through all that stuff. But this is where, you know, like you're saying, that she's starting to believe him, but she's going to wake up in the morning and have a completely blank slate as right. regards Phil here. So he has to do it all over again. Right. And so I know that they cut a lot out because it's a short, you know, you can only do so much in a movie, but every day he has to reconvince her to get her back to the point where she understands what's happening to him.
It's like 50 First Dates. Have you seen that?
I have not.
Tim, now we have a movie for you to watch.
I know. I knew we were going to discover one.
Adam Sandler.
Oh, I like Adam Sandler.
Yes, I love him.
Would you call it a rom-com?
Oh, yeah. And how Drew Barry, she's in it. And it's Barry, the same type of thing. Drew Barrymore. Whatever. And I'm not good with the actors. But it's the same type of thing. She loses her memory, and so she thinks she's reliving the same day over and over and over again, and tries to get her to fall in love with him. Yeah.
Very similar. Sounds like a Groundhog Day ripoff, if you ask me.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I bet you it came out after 1993. I'll bet you.
It sure did.
So anyway, so Rita is convinced, and she spends the rest of that day with Phil, and she encourages him to think of the loop that he's stuck in as a blessing instead of a curse. And at that point, he realizes that he's thinking of Rita. He actually loves her. She's not just some woman that he's trying to get in bed. And so he feels like he's falling in love with her, but then he wakes up in the morning again and he's all by himself. And she was never there. But he decides to use his time that he's got nothing but time to improve himself. And he runs around doing good deeds and catching a kid that falls out of the tree. And he tries to help the homeless guy on the street over and over and over and over again, saving people from deadly accidents. He learns to play the piano. He learns to be an ice sculptor with a chainsaw, of all things. And he learns how to speak French, of all this stuff. And even though he does all these things, he still can't save the old homeless man from dying. Right?
Mm-hmm, right. Why does he keep calling him dad, by the way?
You know, I don't know. Why do you suppose that is? Does this speak to why he was a jerk in the first place? Did he have no father figure growing up?
Maybe, but honestly, when I first saw the old man, I thought that was going to be like a flash forward, and like that was going to be his life if he never turned it around and became a nice, good person. I thought that was going to be like a foreshadowing of this is your life if you don't get it together.
Interesting.
You're going to be homeless with no friends.
That could be. Hmm. Well, this is a clip of Phil going through all the different times, not all the different, but some of them when he's improving himself.
Rita, hi.
Hey, Lear. Hi. How's she look?
Great.
Thank you.
Did you know he could ice sculpt?
No.
Not bad. Mr. Connors, you say this is your first lesson?
Yes, but my father was a piano mover, so. Hello, Father. Let's get you someplace warm, huh? Yeah, remember me?
And so he can't save that guy. We don't know that yet, but there comes a time in the movie where we discover that the guy keeps dying overnight in the cold. Right. And so if he were a god, he would be able to save that guy. Right.
Right. Yeah.
What does this, I don't want to get into a deep theological discussion, but does any of this, so he thinks he's a god, or he's not the god, but a god, but then he focuses on saving this one guy and he can't.
Yeah.
Is there, what do you think?
I don't know. I think that was probably a realization moment for him that he was indeed human. Although he was immortal because he tried to kill himself multiple times. But yeah, that part was really sad to me, especially when they were at the diner and the old man was eating soup and then trying to eat, or he ate a bunch of food. That was so sad because it was just making me think about, turning it into real life, how many like homeless old veterans there are that we don't do a good job of taking care of. And so then I got kind of sad while watching
it. That's very true. It is sad. That's all right. I think it's a lesson to him that he's not a god and that there are limits to whatever this power is that he's got that he didn't know that he had and didn't want. But there are limits to it. He can do things. Maybe the lesson is that all he can really truly do, and this is what people learn in different aspects of life, the only thing you really truly have control over is yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yep. And how you respond to things.
Right, how you respond to things. And he was a jerk before, and he's trying to do good now, and he has changed his approach to other people. But that doesn't mean that he can control what happens to those other people.
Right. He's done the right things, but the other stuff is out of his hands.
Yeah. And so here is his job. The reason he's there is that he's a weatherman and he's there to cover the Groundhog Day festivities. So with that in mind, here's a montage, three different attempts at when he's covering the groundhog. This will show you the progression of how he's acting when he's on the air and doing his job covering the groundhog.
These people are great. Some of them have been partying all night long. They sing songs till they get too cold, and then they go sit by the fire and they get warm, and then they come back and they sing some more.
Yeah, they're hicks, Rita. Groundhog Day used to mean something in this town. They used to pull the hog out and they used to eat it. You're hypocrites, all of you. You got a problem with what I'm saying, Larry? Untie your tongue and you come out here and talk, huh? Am I upsetting you, princess? You know, you want a prediction about the weather. You're asking the wrong Phil. I'll give you a winter prediction. It's gonna be cold. It's gonna be gray. And it's gonna last you for the rest of your life. When Chekhov saw the long winter, he saw a winter bleak and dark and bereft of hope. Yet we know that winter is just another step in the cycle of life. But standing here among the people of Punxsutawney and basking in the warmth of their hearths and hearts, I couldn't imagine a better fate than a long and lustrous winter. From Punxsutawney, it's Phil Connors. So long.
Nice speech, Phil. Very nice.
But that middle one where he's telling her it's going to be a bleak winter and it's going to last your whole life. I mean, whew,
a winter of death. What was it? What was the,
he said, well, he sounded like Joe Biden talking about what last winter was going to be. Everybody dropping dead from COVID.
A winter of suffering and death or one of
something
those.
Like that. Yeah.
Yes. Like he's that. So mean to Larry.
Yeah. Larry kind of deserves it, though. Chris Elliott, he always plays the guys who get kicked around.
Oh, I don't think he deserves it. I feel like he was just trying to do his job, keep his head down, and he was just getting beat up the whole time.
I know. Poor Larry. Yeah. And I've been a local TV person, and the photographers, that we would call them, usually felt like they were underappreciated because they were. But so I do.
Hopefully you were nicer to yours.
I was no Phil Connors, that's for sure. But then by the end, here's a little piece of trivia from this movie. He's in lots of different movies. He's an actor by himself too. But the guy over his shoulder, one of the head Groundhog Club guys, is Bill Murray's brother. Brian Doyle Murray, the guy with a really scratchy voice like mine today, is his brother. In that last clip, he was right over Bill Murray's shoulder. But you can see the progression that right there, like at the beginning, he hates it, but he covers it like a professional weatherman would. And then he's in the middle of it, he just can't take it anymore. And he's like, this place sucks and everybody sucks. And you, Rita, you're going to die alone. You know. Basically, is what he says. And then by the end, he's talking about Chekhov and what it means and so on. And everybody, all the other reporters are covering and tape recording what he's saying because it's so eloquent and moving. That's kind of the arc of the whole thing there. What does that speak to you about regarding the idea of self-improvement, going from a jerk to being?
Yeah, I think at that point, I think by that point he had gotten it. He knew that he'd had all these days to sow his wild oats, actually. And then he finally got it and realized it was time to be a better person. And he made all those changes. And I don't know if he had the thought, like, maybe if I'm a good person, then this will go away. But I think he did it for the right reasons.
I think so. And then, so we're winding up to the finish here. He continues his long day of helping the people of Punxsutawney. And like you were saying, like you mentioned, Rita watches him. There's a party that night. She watches him playing the piano, and the townspeople just love Phil. And they keep coming over to tell Rita all these different awesome things that Phil did to help them during the day, helping ladies change a flat tire, for example, catching the kid falling out of a tree. And then there's a charity auction where they're at raffling off dates, bachelors really. And Rita has to outbid the ladies of the town for Phil. And then he carves a nice sculpture that has Rita's face on it. And then he explains that it doesn't matter what happens if he keeps trapped in this loop that never ends, he will love her. And they go back to his room. Finally, he got what he wanted. And he wakes up the next morning. And at 6 a.m., the alarm clock goes off again. And here's that clip.
Great song.
No, it's not.
No, don't listen to this man.
It's too early.
Why are you here?
I bought you. I own you.
But why are you still here?
You said stay, so I stayed.
So, a couple of things right away that you see in that scene, and you realize, oh, something has changed, because the DJs start with what they're saying is different from the day before. Mm-hmm. Right? And then the second thing is you can see Rita's arm reach across his face to turn the alarm clock off. And you know that he always woke up in bed alone prior to that. This is the big question. What happened that released him from being stuck in the loop?
Didn't he tell her he loves her?
He did the night before, right? After the auction, after he carved the sculpture of her.
Yeah. Yeah. I think his heart was pure. It was in the right place.
I think that's right. Yeah. He finally improved himself to the point where he was loving another person for the sake of that. Mm-hmm. And not was a benefit to him in some way. He wasn't scheming about it anymore. Like, he really actually meant it, and it was returned, and there wasn't anything beyond any of that. And that's the way it ends. That's the way it ends. And they're together, and we presume live happily ever after.
They did. Yep. That was a sweet ending. It was sweet. I'm glad that he got the girl. She was a very sweet girl. I was hoping that things worked out with them.
Yeah, she's Andie MacDowell is kind of like an America's sweetheart kind of actress, you know.
Oh, yeah. She plays the part very well.
She does. So what, at the beginning of this, what you said you had a favorite part, that I have it in the clips or not?
No, actually, I didn't have it in there at all. My favorite part was when he passes the old man that's asking for money, and then his old high school friend comes up to him. Every time, and it's like, whatever his name is.
Well, Ned Ryerson.
Ned Ryerson. On one of the days, he punches him in the face. And I don't know why that just got me. I was dying laughing at that. that was my favorite part.
Yeah. You know, I didn't, of course, he's in that movie a lot of times, that guy.
Yeah.
And I didn't pull that clip because I wasn't sure exactly what it said about his character, because he's obviously a jerk to him right away in the first time you meet him, and then throughout their different encounters. But the last time, when he's trying to round the corner, like, he gives him a big hug and asks him, you know, hey, man, can you call off work early? Like, implying that he wants to
Yeah.
Be with make him. Love. Be with him, you know? So I thought, you know, that's kind of a practical joke that he's playing on the guy. I'm not sure. I'm not sure that shows an improvement of his character.
Yeah, it was funny. It was good. It was a great movie. I'm glad you recommended it. I'm glad you told me to watch it. And now I feel like I can participate in movie trivia because this is a classic and I'm sure it would be in there.
Yeah. Oh, I think it will be from time to time. I believe it's one of Bill Murray's most beloved movies. There's some more trivia about it. It was the movie was written by partially written and then directed by Harold Ramis, who was a comedic writer and director and actor who did a lot of movies that some of them involved Bill Murray. He was involved in Caddyshack. He produced Caddyshack. He was involved in Ghostbusters and starred in.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, Harold Ramis was one of the Ghostbusters in the movie. What else did they do together? A movie called Stripes, which you probably didn't see when they joined the Army. Bill Murray joins the Army. That's a good one. But during the course of the making of this movie, Groundhog Day, they had a difference of opinion about which way the movie was going to go. And I may have this backwards, but I think Bill Murray liked the darker part, the way the movie was darker. And Harold Ramis wanted it to be more funny, and they had a real tug of war about it, and they had a big falling out, and they didn't speak again at all until right before Harold Ramis died
in 2014,
which is what, 21 years later.
Wow. Yeah, I did not know that.
Yeah, pretty amazing. And and also it was not shot in Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania, for God's sake.
I was wondering that. If it was at the same place.
Great lies of Hollywood. Hollywood lies to you. You know that, right?
I sure do.
Yeah. It took place in various places in Illinois, actually.
Okay.
A little town called Woodstock, Illinois, and in another town called Cary, Illinois. They found towns that looked like they had hoped Punxsutawney would look, I guess. And so they found cuter towns. I'm sorry for Punxsutawney. They had to go elsewhere for additional cute towns. And then here's the answer to your question about how long was he actually stuck.
Oh, yeah. What's the estimate?
This website, which is, I don't know how they figured this out, but it's a website called whatculture.com. Whatculture.com. They estimate that he repeated that same day 12,395 times. Harold Ramis originally, who was the director, Harold Ramis said that he originally thought that he was stuck there for about 10 years, but then later he decided that was too short, that you couldn't learn to be that good at that many things that quickly. So over 33 years, 350 days. Is what it comes to. Reliving the same day over and over again, that equals that amount of time.
He didn't age at all.
Nope, he sure didn't, which is funny because he should have. Yep. There's another hole in it. He should have aged while everybody else stayed the same.
That is true.
Good point there, Sonny. Good catch. well, this was thoroughly enjoyable, and I hope that you enjoyed having seen it and broadcast to the world your ignorance of this movie in the first place.
There are many other movies that I unfortunately have not seen, and we could probably do the same thing with.
Yeah. Well, we could do 50 First Dates one time if you want to do that.
Oh, yes.
Okay. Well, if you enjoyed this, I encourage everybody to like and subscribe and click the thumbs up thing and do all the things on all the different platforms. And we appreciate it. Thank you, Sonny, for going through this with me, because this has been, as it always has been, as it always will be, the Line Drive Podcast.